Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Schoerlein.
Welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. This is episode number 15. Today is Friday, November 30th, and I'm your host, Michael Schoerlein, as always. A bunch has happened here over the last couple of weeks since we last spoke. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I've been super busy with work and things around the house and the kids running around when they were off last week from school, so I apologize for the delay between episodes here. Hope you guys understand. Now, last Friday, I spoke with the author of the upcoming book, We Want Fish Sticks, Nick Hirshon, and we talked about his book. We go into detail on the Islanders and some of the changes that were made in the offseason, like we've spoken to with some of the other people over the course of this podcast. And we go into so many different great things. I'm really excited for his book. It actually comes out tomorrow, December 1st, and we'll hear about that later on in the episode. We're also going to talk a little bit about the games here over the last couple of weeks. You know, we had that terrible loss to Dallas, which I think we spoke about previously. Then we got shut out by the Rangers the night before Thanksgiving Eve. We bounced back with a win over the Devils. Matt Barzal scores in overtime. We won against Carolina again. Thomas Greiss just has their number. Looks great. And we had the game last night against Boston. Did we have a game previous to that? Oh, yes, we did. The Capitals. See, it's been so long, I can't even remember. We lost against the Capitals. Barry Trotz got his ring. I don't know if you heard some of the stuff he had said in his interview, but, you know, he thanked his former players. They got his ring to him. They got the assistant coach's ring, Lambert, and Mitch Korn. So they all spoke. It was pretty good. Maybe we'll talk about that a little more in depth in a little bit. He said, I know you guys can do it again, but you're going to have to go through the island. And that was such a cool thing to hear. As a matter of fact, maybe I'll even play the clip here so you can get the infliction yourself, because I'm never going to be able to get it across the way that he did. But it was just great to hear a coach speak like that with such pride and know that he's our coach now and he wants to do the same things here on the island. So that's good. But they played really terrible against the Rangers. I don't even know if we're going to bother going into it. But, you know, over the course of the last couple games, power play has been absolutely atrocious, which we've spoken about. I would love to see the Islanders incorporate a power play like the Bruins did last night. Get it in the zone quick zone entry. Dump the puck in, chase the puck, retrieve the puck. What do? They don't pass around the perimeter waiting for a perfect shot. They have a quick slot pass, almost backdoorish. Boom, who's there? Brad Marchand scores. It was within 15 seconds of the power play starting. Boom, goal. That's why they're the number two rated power play in the entire league, based on puck movement alone, I would say. Now, the Islanders, they have some good looks from time to time. They do. But you know what? It's not about perfection. Hockey is an imperfect sport. Sometimes you score goals in the strangest ways. You can't diagram every single play. Things just happen naturally. Things happen as the game progresses. Sometimes you just dump the puck in. It catches a stanchion. The goalie thinks it's going to come to the left. Oh, it came out to the right. Now it's in the net. You can't plan for stuff like that. So what are you going to do? You need quick puck movement. I don't know if it's a matter of them not playing a diamond or whether they're just – it's a box and they're too far apart. You know, I haven't really sat and looked at replays that closely to sit and break down the breakdowns I mean, they haven't, and I can't even really call it breakdowns because we're not allowing shorthanded goals. They're just not scoring. So you obviously know what I mean there. But shots from the point aren't getting through. They're being blocked. They're being deflected. They're being knocked out of play. They'll have great possession the whole entire 2 minutes sometimes, but they just pass around the perimeter. Teams are going to just love for them to pass around the perimeter the whole 2 minutes. Go ahead, kill the penalty yourself. It's fine, guys. It's fine. So get those shots on net. Get the guy moving. Get the guys down low moving. Rotate. Go around the net. Get the goalie moving left to right, up, down, all over the place. Get a big body in front of him if you're going to shoot from the point, for God's sakes. Come on. Now, I'm not even going to blame Barry Trotz on this because he's just a great coach. We have to point to some of the guys maybe in the background, and I'm not even looking at Lane Lambert. I'm pretty much looking at Scott Gomez. So I'm not sold on him. I don't understand why he's a leftover here, obviously because of his tie-in to Lou Lamoriello. But something's got to be done, and I believe this week Barry Trotz said if the game against Boston didn't show improvement special teams-wise, he would change it up. Now, obviously, injuries have been a big part of this. Matt Martin was down. Cal Clutterbuck was down with injury. Casey Cizikas was down up until yesterday. So it was great to see him back. The penalty kill looked great. That fourth line looked amazing. So it's good to see them healthy and banging bodies. Speaking of banging bodies, did you see that hit by Thomas Hickey last night? My goodness. I don't remember what player that it was, if it was Torrey Krug or somebody else, but caught him with his head down, center ice, boom. Nice big hit. Turns out he lost a tooth, and I don't know if you saw the clip of Johnny Boychuk skating around, finding the tooth, and delivering it like a tooth fairy to the Boston Bruins bench. That was just amazing. Another one of those awesome Bay moments, as Nightvine would like to say. Boychuk's just the man when it comes to funny stuff like that. The Mukembe Mutombo no, he did last week too. That was just hysterical. So, I mean, we have stuff like that that we should be happy about. Obviously, the play has not been all bad, but still a lot of things to tighten up on. We need to fix a couple of things here. 5-on-5, the teams have been playing great. They look great, even though they lost against the Capitals. Trotz said it looked like they showed them too much respect, which maybe they did. But they hung around there. I mean, it was a 1-1 game for a while, and then, you know, penalty trouble once again. And there was that weird situation where there was no goalie there for a little while. They thought there was a delayed penalty, and the Islanders had no puck awareness. What are you going to do in that situation? You dump it down the ice at the empty net. They didn't, but it's okay. We'll move on from there. So beyond some of the Islanders stuff that's happened, you know, and we had Dal Cole up for a little, for a couple of games for a cup of coffee, and he didn't look terrible, but, you know, he had limited ice time, so he got sent back down. You had Fritzy up. He looked pretty good. He's back down too, though. So, I mean, you have your roster pretty much back to where it was prior to some of the injuries. The only person that's still out is Andrew Ladd. And I don't know if anybody saw Andy Graziano and I go back and forth on Twitter. It looked like a really bad leg injury. And he had originally thought it was his back again. And then we brought up some of the clips and the replays, and then he reached out to a source, and it seems like it is some sort of leg injury. So speedy recovery to him. Hopefully he doesn't miss all too much time. But leg injuries, as we saw a couple of years ago with Anders Lee, tough to come back from. You know, he just blocked a shot and broke his leg, and he missed the end of the season in the playoffs that year. So tough injuries to come back from, especially mid-season. Especially for a guy who's had such a problem there with injuries as well. Other than that, though, I mean, goaltender's been looking great. Grice still up to his standard here this season. I don't know if he'll continue to be able to handle the workload. Hopefully, they sprinkle Robin Lehner back in. And as much as they started Lehner last night, I would be remiss if I didn't admit that I didn't start Lehner in fantasy because I had both him and Tuca, and I went with Tuca, so maybe it's my fault they lost. in a shootout last night. Now, the shootout, that's the other thing. Did these guys not talk to each other on the bench? I had said on Reddit earlier today, you know, because I'm a nerd and I read all sorts of things. I said it was like the scene from Knocked Up when Jason Segel's doing the dice thing too much. That was basically the Islanders in the shootout last night. They were doing the dice thing too much. Pretty much all five attempts were the same exact move. No deviation. No change in speed. Let me drop a backhand top shelf a la Franz Nielsen, or as we should say these days, Valtteri Filppula, the weirder Franz Nielsen. So, yeah, I don't know. Also, that shot by Barzal in overtime, I don't know how that, A, wasn't a tripping penalty when Bolivier got tripped and landed in Tuukka's crease. He was definitely taken in there, and I know that's me with a homerish view. I don't think that was avoidable contact. I'm sorry. Yeah, he was going hard to the net. He was playing the puck. Puck squirts out right to Matt. Matt backhands it upstairs. Your guy put our guy in the crease and forced you to not make a save. I'm sorry. I don't understand how that's not a goal. I'm sorry. So whatever, they got jobbed there a little bit, but we got a point. We played Boston pretty well. You know, I would hate for it to hurt somewhere down the line. I guess we'll see there, though. Now, we're not going to do any Twitter questions or anything this week because just we went a little long with Nick about this book, and it's something I'm excited about, and you know, we'll go into that in a minute. But last episode, Wayne Caffarella of King's Coast Coffee sent me out a couple of pounds of some of his roast. And I don't want this to sound too commercialish, and a couple people questioned even why I had him on the show, but he is an Islander fan. He's somebody I know through Beer League Hockey. I wanted to support his business. Plus, now that I've had a chance to drink the coffee the last couple of weeks, oh my God, guys, go out, buy this stuff. Or you can't really go out and buy it, but you can go to the website, King's Coast Coffee, and you can buy it. Use the discount code Isles10. For 10% off your order. I believe it's Isles 10. Maybe it's Isles 15. I'll link to it in the comments regardless, but check them out on Twitter at Kings Coast or Kings underscore Coast and Chef Wayne Face. They have a Facebook page, Instagram, really good social media stuff. He's a funny dude, and their merch is just awesome. And while we're on the topic of merch, Yes Men Outfitters is teamed up with Oyster Bay Brewing Company and Ion Isles, and they're going to have a tremendous, absolute tremendous tailgate this weekend when the Islanders return back to Nassau Coliseum. Fort never lose. Yeah, they may have dressed it up a little bit, but it's still the barn. It's still that junk of a building, but hey, it's home, it's our home, right? And we're gonna hopefully kick some butt there the remainder of this season and potentially the next two seasons. Some other news on that front as well. Today it looked like John Ledecky had released a statement that there was no major hurdles regarding the environmental study for Belmont, so that's great. Also, we'll look for some news there here in the next couple of days as we move into December, because the preliminary report is due sometime in the first week or so of December, which we heard in an earlier episode when we had Jim Baumbach of Newsday on. So I'll put a link in the description to that. This way we can get caught up. You hear me? I'm tripping over my own words. But yeah, I reached out to Jim actually today, and I said, let's try to pick a date once things get moving along here so we can catch back up and get a nice little update on the arena situation, as we like to say in the Twitterverse. Also, back to the merch. Yes Men Outfitters has given us a discount code for you guys to use. He's got some great shirts, obviously, and sweatshirts and hats and all sorts of cool things, beer koozies and cups and mugs and all that stuff. I'm going to actually be placing a pretty large Christmas order for myself. You know, I got to stuff my own stocking. And he gave us a code to use. Use Faithful10 for 10% off your order. So if you want to get some Christmas gifts for that Islander fan, do it. Devin has been really nice here to us on the podcast and has been doing some great stuff with some of the other podcast guys and the Big Isles groups going down to D.C. and Philly and Charlotte and Florida. And the dude just travels all over the place. I don't know how he does it, plus maintains his awesome business. But that's enough commercial stuff here. I don't want to get you guys too annoyed to the point where you're already clicked off. But if you did, hey, I'm sorry. Maybe you'll come back. But let's hear from Nick, and we'll talk a little bit after that. All right, welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. This week's episode, we have author of We Want Fish Sticks, Nick Hirshon. How's it going, Nick?
All right, thanks for having me, Michael.
So, you know, obviously the other night against the Rangers didn't really work out as it did in the first game, and a bunch of drama ensued after the game. I don't know if you saw that in the post. I guess an Islanders fan beat up a Rangers fan, got arrested, and all that other stuff.
An Islanders fan who was wearing a Todd Bertuzzi-era fish sticks jersey. So, yes, I did see that story.
So you obviously know why I decided to bring that up, because it's a good tie-in.
Yep. Yeah, I've got very familiar with Todd Bertuzzi's work as an Islander during the research for this book, so I thought that was interesting.
All right. Speaking about the book, We Want Fish Sticks, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? You know, what do you do for a living? I understand, you know, you're a professor, and tell me how you decided you wanted to write this book.
Well, I grew up as an Islanders fan. I came to the team a little bit late in my life when I was a teenager and really started rooting for the team strong in 1999, even though they were a last place team at that time. And if you remember, it was the days of Mats Lindgren and Tim Connolly and Felix Potvin and Mario Strakowski and Kenny Jansen, all those guys. Later on, I became a newspaper reporter. So I worked for the New York Daily News for 6 years, 2006, 2011. And then freelanced a little bit for the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. I eventually decided to go the academic route because I wanted to teach. So I went to Ohio University to get my PhD in mass communication from 2013 to 2016. And it was during my time in the doctoral program there that I had to develop a dissertation, your final manuscript that becomes kind of the living document vouching for your expertise in whatever area it is that you're going to claim to be an expert in. And I decided that I wanted to try to work in the story of the Fisherman logo. I didn't really know much about it since I became a fan a little bit after their time wearing it. But I thought this is kind of a curious story. A lot of the people who live this story are still alive today, so I could interview them. A lot of the archival research could be done looking at Newsday, the Daily News, all those sorts of papers that were out there. It was just a really fun story to tell and to spend a few years. I had to do this big document, this big research project anyway. Why not make it something that was really fun and dear to my heart?
So you are essentially the doctor of Islanders fans, or the, you know, we should just call you Doc for now on. Kind of like Doc Otzi is one of my Twitter followers. He's been a great guy. I think he's some sort of surgeon. He'll probably yell at me for not remembering.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I have a few students who call me Doc every now and then, which is kind of funny, especially when you earned your doctorate in part by writing about the Fisherman era New York Islanders. I should mention that, you know, I defended my dissertation in 2016 about the Islanders, and then I came to work at William Patterson University in New Jersey, which is where I am now.
Awesome. You know, it's kind of funny. You know, everybody takes some sort of passion in life and tries to tie it into their professional life, and when you get a mixture of everything, it sounds like you've kind of landed like a dream gig, because you got into doing what you wanted to do, you wrote like many of us do, and now, you know, basically your career started based on the New York Islanders, which is great.
Yeah, I figure if you're gonna have to do all of this hard work and research, why not make it something that you really love? And people warn you from time to time, don't do that. Don't mix work and pleasure in that way. You'll start to hate the Islanders. You won't want to talk about them ever again because you're doing so much research on them. But I've never had that problem. I've still, to this day, love talking about the Fisherman logo and all these stories that are in that book. I just think it's a really colorful period and underreported period that we don't know that much about, and kind of gets a bad rep without people really exploring it in depth. So I'm totally on board with researching the Islanders every opportunity that I get. This is just one of many projects that I've done involving the Islanders. I wrote a book in 2010 about the history of Nassau Coliseum. So it included not only the Islanders, but just all the concerts and Billy Joel and Elvis Presley and political speeches by Nixon and Ford there and all the other teams that played at the Coliseum, like the Nets and the New York Arrows soccer team, the New York Sets tennis team. But then I've also done a few academic journal articles in the last few years about the reputation of Nassau Coliseum, especially in the 1990s as the sports radio hosts on WFAN were talking very negatively about the building, calling it a white elephant, as Mike Francesa did, or Nassau Mausoleum, as Steve Summers famously did. So I've been interested in the history of this building and of this franchise for a long time.
You know, it's funny that pretty much everything negative, you know, by and large, for, you know, outside of what we can make fun of them ourselves for being fans. But a lot of the weird history about the New York Islanders, like the mausoleum and fish sticks and everything else, are rivals, across town rivals in the New York Rangers, and their fans kind of, you know, named us and chided us as the little bastard stepchild. And, you know, why don't we go into some of that, how fish sticks and the Gordon Fisherman, similarities between the jersey kind of parlayed into, you know, what we see today. And now a little background, you know, I don't completely hate the jersey. The colors maybe were strange in that there was teal and, you know, we were always like a royal or a navy blue. But the design, the overall design, because I'm 99% sure if my recollection is correct, that the Seattle Mariners, the company that designed their logo, also designed the Fisherman logo.
I believe that's correct. SME, Sean Michael Edwards, is the name of the branding firm that created the Fisherman logo. And it had created lots of popular logos of the time, including the Toronto Raptors, the Florida Panthers, and has since gone on to create logos in pretty much every major sport that you can imagine, logos for the Mets and the World Series and on and on. So they are a very well-respected branding firm. And honestly, this is probably one of the few failures in their record. And I really don't even think it's on them so much as it is on the Islanders for picking one of the many, many logos that SME presented them with, picking one that probably was not among the stronger ones for whatever reason.
You know, and it's weird also in that the history of Long Island and fishing in our communities is so prevalent. Like even where I live, because I'm all the way out on the east end of Long Island, I have family who are baymen and commercial fishermen. So there are ties to so many different families, especially native Long Islanders, where this resonates with. And it's unfortunate in that, you know, we couldn't really utilize the logo. And again, because I actually like the logo. I just, the history of the Islanders, you can't change something as simple and almost perfect as the Islanders logo. It would be like trying to change the spoked wheel in Detroit, you know, for all intents and purposes.
I think that's what really went wrong here, is that regardless of whatever design the Islanders came up with, it was going to be met with resistance because you're replacing a logo that is iconic to Islanders fans as an original six logo would be, as you're saying, to Red Wings fans or Rangers fans or Blackhawks fans. So you have a logo that is the only icon the team has worn since its inception in 1972, worn during this unprecedented streak of success when they won the four Stanley Cups in the early 1980s. And even though they had some down years in the early 90s, fans mostly associated that logo with all of the great players whose names are in the rafters and with all of their own personal memories of going to games with their families, with, you know, other fans who just really came to respect and love that team. So replacing that logo wholesale, and that's what they did with the Fisherman logo. Remember, it's not like the Fisherman logo was a third jersey only worn in 15 or 20 games in a season. They said sayonara completely to this only logo the team had ever known, and we're going to replace it with an icon that then was very easy to make fun of because they hadn't really done any focus groups, any sort of testing that would have turned up, this looks so much like the Gordon's Fisherman, that could be a point of contention. People are going to mock it right away. And to your point about the Rangers fans, as in any rivalry with other fan bases, they're going to be looking for any small opportunity they can to tweak you, as they should be. Islanders fans do it to Rangers fans, too. There used to be the 1940 chants and so many other things. So this just gave fans on opposing from opposing teams a greater opportunity to rib the Islanders.
And, you know, and again, that's fine. That's sports. That's, you know, the way we interact with rivals and rival fans, is as long as it doesn't end up like the other night on Wednesday when it comes down to, you know, physical assault and everything. You know, you let the players on the ice fight it out. You don't fight it out in the stands. That's just ridiculous. I know people are passionate, and their passion mixed with alcohol can tend to do things in the wrong direction. But, you know, I'm fine with everything that the Islanders and the Islanders fans get as far as, you know, vocal abuse sometimes, because it's just sports. As long as, again, is respectful, it's fine. So now, you know, in your process of writing the book and your interviews, take us through maybe some one or two of your favorite stories that you come across with either a former player. I understand, was it Eric Fichaud contributed to the book as well?
That's right. Eric Fichaud, who was a goalie on those teams, wrote the foreword to the book. I also interviewed him, but he wrote a great foreword about his time starting with the Islanders. He has some good stories in there about the day he was called up was actually on Super Bowl Sunday in 1996, I believe. And he was trying to call the equipment manager because he was playing, I think, with the Islanders minor league affiliate in Worcester at the time. And no one was around. This was an era before cell phones, so he couldn't even reach the equipment manager to open the door to the arena where Eric had kept all of his gear. So he kind of had to just go to the arena unannounced and beg somebody, let me in and get all his stuff and drive over to Long Island, which he did without any GPS. Again, this is, you know, almost 25 years ago. So, yeah, there were a lot of funny stories that he was telling. But I interviewed 52 people for this book who were somehow involved in the rebranding of the Islanders, from multiple players to announcers for the team, like Chris King, Howie Rose, people who were involved in the ownership groups, such as Steve Gluckstern, who ended up taking control of the team towards the end of this failed rebranding effort, the son of John Pickett, who was the owner of the team at the time, Brett Pickett, and just all these people who were working in the Islanders' executive offices, directors of game events, vice president of communication, the guy who played the Islanders mascot, the attorney who filed the copyright form for the actual Fisherman logo itself, to try to get a really complete story of what happened in this era.
That's very in-depth. And again, I haven't purchased the book, but I plan on it. It's one of those things that every time a book about the Islanders comes out, you know, especially over the last 20 years, I've purchased it. They're always good reads. I'm a huge fan. And obviously, I've gotten to experience a side of the Islanders like yourself that not a lot of people get to experience. So I like to hear all sides. And I'm really speaking about the book that Peter Boddy and what's his face wrote from
Alan Hahn.
Yes. So that was a good book. Stan's books are always a great read as well. And if I'm not mistaken, I know some people that are planning on writing some books in the future, or so their claims are. So, I mean, we'll see as far as that. Now, what about current players? Did you interview any current players on the team about this weird history and this little quirky thing?
Not really. I interviewed mostly the players who wore the logo between 95 and 97. So while I was doing this research, I created a spreadsheet where I went to Hockey Reference, and anybody who played at least one game for the Islanders during that period, I plugged in their name, I wrote in the number of games that they played, and I just tried to track them down. A lot of them are still in hockey in some way, maybe a coach of a college or a pro team. I interviewed Travis Green at the time when he was in the Vancouver Canucks minor league system, and now, you know, he's become the head coach. But I was not really looking so much for the current player perspective. I included some stories in the book about what had happened in more recent years, such as in 2015, when the Islanders brought back the Fisherman logo for one game in warmups. They wore it in February of 2015. And, you know, I have a photo in the book of Cal Clutterbuck wearing the Fisherman jersey. I'm telling some stories about John Tavares being asked questions in the locker room that day. I know we are not allowed to say the name John Tavares, but at that time, the captain of the Islanders, when people were asking him all about the fisherman logo when he was wearing it in warm-up. So I do try to bring it to the current day, but I really want to focus not so much on just these stray opinions that people might have about the logo, but informed experiences. People who were actually there, who've never really had a chance to tell those stories, or they've been told in all these separate areas, bring it all together to tell this one narrative of what I call the worst sports branding effort of all time.
If you could pick any interview, and it sounds like you sat down with quite a few people, and I don't want you to give away any kind of huge, you know, aspects of the book, because we want people to buy it. Now, if you could pick any one interview that you sat through, which would be your favorite and why?
There are a few that come to mind. I would probably have to pick Tommy Soderstrom as number one, because I didn't know much about him. He was a goalie on those Islanders teams, of course, and a goalie for the Flyers, probably best known for wearing this mask that, you know, had all the lattice work across it. And I just didn't really know much about him as a player. And then I, you know, watched some of the videos from that era online where he actually got into a fight with one of the goalies on the Devils. And there was all these just interesting stories about the way he acted, and talking to a few of his teammates before I interviewed Tommy, just hearing that he was a unique guy, to say the least. And then when I got a hold of him, I think I tracked him down through social media somehow. I think it may have been his LinkedIn page or something. And he immediately wrote back and said, yeah, let's do this interview. And I think he called me like right away. And I believe I contacted him on a holiday. It was like Columbus Day or something in the United States. And he called me like minutes later from wherever he was, which was not in the country. And just telling me all of these stories about playing under Mike Milbury, about his relationship with other players. And really being honest about that. But one of the favorite stories that I have in the book is there was a game where the Islanders were beaten pretty handily. And after the game, Milbury decided, he was the coach at the time, and he was so angry at them that he wanted to skate them, basically do a bag skate and have them go out on the ice and do laps. And he would tell his coaches, I want you to do this until the players puke. And in this case, he took out a Webster's dictionary and came onto the ice. And this is also documented in Newsday at the time, so I know it's not just Tommy Soderstrom telling me this great, colorful story. And he told the players, I'm going to read a word from the dictionary that you need to learn, and then you're going to do a lap each time. So he'd read a word like attitude or heart and say, you guys don't have any heart. Now skate the length of Nassau Coliseum. And then, you know, they kept doing it and doing it until they're completely exhausted, of course. And Soderstrom told me that after this happens, he goes into the locker room and he said, when he was on the dictionary looking up A, I thought he was going to say asshole, like Mike Milbury, your coach is an asshole. And I just thought that was kind of a funny story about these guys making the most or trying to make light of what was clearly a bad time for them. The team was losing. Their coach was running them really hard. And there are tons of stories in the book about Mike Milbury as the coach and the general manager of the team. And that's been well documented in Islanders history, some of the bizarre moves that he made. But yeah, I'd have to say Soderstrom was one of the best. Rich Pilon was a great interview too. There's Eric Fichaud, again, very honest. Dean Chenough, who later became a coach for the Islanders, gave some really great inside information about fights that Milbury got in with players. So there's lots of that sort of stuff. And then again, people who weren't players on the team, but just the stories we are less used to hearing are names that would be less familiar to Islanders fans. But the people working in the executive offices who were really making these sorts of decisions and who saw so much. So they can tell us in some cases more on the players. They know more than the players because players weren't involved in creating the fisherman logo, you know, unveiling these jerseys. But these guys were.
You know, I'm never surprised at some of the weird, quirky stories that I hear about Mike Milbury. You know, a couple of weeks back, I sat down with Mark Parrish and we had a good long chat about, you know, past, present and future. And some of the things he brought up about Milbury were just priceless. So including even the trade that brought him to the island, you know, in general, because, I mean, look what went back the other way. So
right, they lost Roberto Luongo in that deal, right? And I think that with Milbury, it's interesting because there are times in this period first of all, when he was hired, the Islanders are, you know, looking for a new coach. They had fired Lorne Henning, who was one of the players on the dynasty teams, of course. And they, you know, have come off of this run with Al Arbour as their coach for so long. And they're trying to make a little bit of a splash when they unveil the Fisherman logo in the summer of 1995. So they're interviewing a bunch of different candidates, including Barry Melrose, who we know is the ESPN analyst, and Milbury. And Newsday and the New York Times are pushing the Islanders, you have to hire Mike Milbury. You're going to be a joke if you don't hire him. He is the most attractive candidate on the market. He had led the Boston Bruins to the conference and Stanley Cup final. He is just a well-respected former player from being on the Bruins for so many years, especially in some of those bruising series that they played versus the Islanders in the 70s and 80s. And they hire him, and it seems to be a public relations coup at the time. And then it turns out that he's probably not the best choice to run this particular mix of players. He didn't have the talent that he had when he was coaching in Boston, and he had Cam Neely and Ray Bourque and those kinds of players. You're now looking at a bunch of raw rookies and aging veterans. So they needed a different kind of a coach, and they also just needed more talent on the roster. But I think Milbury very quickly got frustrated with the lack of talent. That exposed a lot of flaws in his own coaching philosophy. And later he becomes, startlingly, the general manager at the same time that he's the coach. So Don Maloney is fired as the general manager of the team. And Milbury, even though he's led the team to such a record that it got the general manager fired, he's named both roles, really just, I think, because the Islanders are trying to save money. And Milbury agreed to be coach and general manager without taking a bump in his salary. And then, of course, there's all of the trades, and he gets into contract disputes with Travis Green and Ziggy Palfy. There's that funny line where at one point he's negotiating with Ziggy Palfy's agent, Paul Kraus, and he tells the newspapers, you know, he's getting so frustrated with Paul Kraus, who lived in Edmonton at the time. And so he says, it's a shame that Paul Kraus lives in Edmonton, in a big city. He's depriving some small village of a pretty good idiot.
I remember that quote.
And of course, he said that Travis Green was a gutless puke, one of the famous lines of Milbury in that era. And there's so many other colorful quotes. So it made it really fun for me to be going back through the newspaper and TV coverage at the time, just to see him talking about things that, you know, NHL coaches don't do or say. And, you know, there's the time that he spits at Ulf Samuelsson when he's skating past the Islanders bench, the Rangers player, Rangers, you know, tormentor. And then he denies that he spit at him. Then years later said, of course I spit at him. So he just has a really funky way of viewing things. But that makes this story all the more incredible. All the different characters that were involved in here. And Milbury is one of those truly larger than life sort of characters.
You know, and I think in some ways he was exactly what the Islanders needed, but yet didn't need simultaneously at the time, because, you know, he became a story that was larger than, you know, the team itself, and he was a character, and, you know, but he did kind of bring a little bit of respectability back to the Islanders until, you know, it went out the window again, but that's neither here nor there. And then the way he dealt with the whole Trevor Linden fiasco as well, which you didn't bring up.
Yeah, and Trevor Linden came, you know, at the end of the era that I'm writing about. So Trevor Linden never had to have the indignity of wearing the Fisherman jersey. But I do mention when he becomes the Islanders captain. And again, yeah, when, like you say, when Milbury was first hired, he brought a lot of respectability. A lot of people were praising the Islanders for making this move, and specifically praising Don Maloney as the general manager for hiring someone who, even at the time that Milbury came onto the team, people were already talking about him being a someday replacement as general manager. But it just didn't work out. There were too many flaws. Milbury didn't have really, you know, the kind of coaches around him who could maybe corral him. The ownership was unwilling to do that, so he was running amok.
All right, again, we're speaking with Nick Hirshon, who wrote a great book, it seems like, in We Want Fish Sticks. The book will be available when? December 1st, correct?
Yeah, you can pre-order it today, be in bookstores starting December 1st.
All right. Now, let's go into a little bit of current events here. Obviously, the Islanders came out to a great start under new head coach Barry Trotz and GM Lou Lamoriello. They brought in a couple of guys that a lot of people questioned whether or not would work out or not in Valtteri Filppula. You know, they brought back Matt Martin. You also have Leo Komarov, who, you know, has looked okay. Obviously, the contract is the biggest question mark there. We're kind of hitting a wall in terms of the last couple of games we've played. Teams with speed, the Islanders haven't really been able to counter all that much. Special teams are struggling a little bit. Obviously, the penalty kill is near the top of the league, but the power play is atrocious. Some of the younger players are struggling. We saw Anthony Beauvillier almost get sent back down, then explodes with a hat trick. Then he scored again against the Rangers. And, you know, obviously Matt Barzal struggling a little bit, but still somehow producing a point per game. So what are your thoughts there?
I think that what we're going to see from the Islanders this year is really a roller coaster. I think we've already experienced that. The offseason was a roller coaster, right? I mean, you have the hiring of Lou Lamoriello and maybe even more prominently the firing of Garth Snow after more than a decade of incompetence and fans kind of blasting him as being this terrible general manager. And then the goodwill of bringing aboard Barry Trotz, the Stanley Cup winning coach. And then having this then immediately, you know, gut punch when you have John Tavares surprisingly leaving the team. So, you know, it was a lot of ups and downs there. The offseason, they didn't necessarily get any big names that fans may have hoped for. But it seems like there's a true culture change going on with the team. And that's what's more important when you have such a well-respected Hall of Fame general manager and coach. And just changing the culture of the Islanders, making it very professional, making players hopefully want to come here in the future. If they're in contention at the trade deadline, players wouldn't be hesitant about coming over there. And certainly when we have an off season, when free agents are thinking about places to go, suddenly Long Island starts looking attractive. You have a new arena in the offing. You have more games being played at Nassau Coliseum, which is very exciting for me as a fan of that building. And just knowing the electric atmosphere that can be created there. So I kind of view this as a bit of a, I don't know if it's a rebuilding year, but one of those in-between years. It's kind of like the start of something that could be really good. You know, like people look back, I'm also a Mets fan, and people kind of look back at like 1984, 1985. You're starting to see the fruits of what would come out in 1986 when they won the World Series. And I think that's sort of what we're seeing here is like, you know, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs this year. I think they might be able to. And if they can make a little bit of noise, you never know what happens when you get into the playoffs. But even if they don't, the kind of team they're building, it looks like they're going to re-sign Anders Lee, right? He's their captain now. By naming him the captain, I think they're making that statement. They do not want him to leave. You really don't want to have captains leave in consecutive off seasons with Tavares and then.
Absolutely not, you know, no.
Yeah, and that was something that was also a problem for them in the Fisherman era of just having too much change. And if they had just kept, you know, some consistency. So now it seems like they have very stable ownership, stable management, some really good players moving back to Long Island, the future arena at Belmont. There's a lot of positives to take out of what's been happening around the team. And yeah, some nights we're going to get like what happened on Thanksgiving Eve versus the Rangers. But I think in the long run, you have to feel so good about where this team is headed.
Absolutely. You know, and it's going to be growing pains, you know, and I think a lot of people would sign up for that because we have Barry Trotz and Lane Lambert, and then you have the goalie guru down in Mitch Korn and Piero Greco. Obviously, they're turning the Islanders' goaltending around, and defensively, they look like they're such a way more sound team this season. But again, you know, some of the forwards seem to struggle, disappear. And, you know, in the past, when they've struggled like this under Jack Capuano and Doug Waite, you said, oh my God, you just knew that they weren't really going to change anything. But the second this team seems to struggle, Barry Trotz throws the lines into a blender, and then you see all sorts of different combinations at practice. I know they practiced yesterday on Thanksgiving. He was definitely upset with the effort and the way they seemed to kind of disappear against the Rangers. But again, you know, teams are going to struggle sometimes. Teams are also going to fail to show up. It's a matter of how the coaching staff gets the players to respond to adversity. And that's been a big thing for Barry Trotz. He wants to see how this team responds to adversity. And in a couple of times now over the last couple of games where there's been some adversity, they haven't really risen to the occasion. So that's going to be his next goal, is to teach them how to rise to the occasion when teams and themselves start to struggle. So we'll see, hopefully, if that changes this afternoon against the Devils. Obviously, the Devils haven't really been getting the goaltending that they had gotten previously, and Keith Kincaid and Corey Schneider. So, I mean, it's always going to be one of those games, again, against the Devils, where it can go either way, because we seem to match up really well against them. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, I think Islanders fans just have to be patient, and it's really tough because we haven't had a lot to root for in many years. And look at me as a fan, you know, became a fan in 1999, and I've never seen them get past the second round. Even that was a one time getting into the second round was like the highlight of what they've done during my time as a fan. But you can just see the making of good things on the horizon. There's starting to be that stability that any franchise needs to be successful. And I do think that there will still be a lot of really fun games this season left. I mean, I'm excited. I have that Rock the Island plans. So I'll be going to 13 games at the Coliseum, including the December 1st game, their first game back, the day that my book comes out. So I just think it's going to be a lot of positives, a lot of those building blocks, seeing Barzal and Lee and Bailey and some of these guys coming up is going to be pretty fun for the rest of the season.
That's exactly what I'm looking forward to as well. And then you have, you know, the unknown factor in what Lou Lamoriello is going to do in the offseason. We have some big names in free agency out there. We never know which way they're going to go with the goaltending. And it's not just the rumored deals that, you know, or the rumored players that could be moving in the offseason that you hear about. Sometimes a trade comes out of left field that you didn't even know someone was available, but Lou Lamoriello is going to shake every tree, every bush to see what falls out. And, you know, you might see a player or two that you don't want to see moved get moved for the better. So, I mean, that's always something as well. But that at the end of the day, there are blue skies ahead. You know, the clouds started to depart, you know, after July, once the season was getting closer and the sting of losing 91 kind of wore off. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be attempting to get to a bunch more games at the Coliseum because obviously I live like an hour and a half away, so it's a little tough. But again, I mean, your book is coming out on December 1st. Tell everybody again, you know, where they can purchase it. Let me know your socials, where everyone can find you and tweet at you and everything like that.
Yeah, so the name of the book is We Want Fish Sticks, the Bizarre and Infamous Rebranding of the New York Islanders. And you can pre-order it right now on Amazon is probably the best way. It's listed right now for only $20 on Amazon, even though the list price for the book is going to be $30. So that's a good way to get a deal right now. And then it'll be in bookstores on December 1st. And I'm on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Nick Hirshon. So NickHirshon. I have all of these things I'm going to be tweeting out about the Fisherman Era Islanders. I'll be tweeting especially about some signings that I have coming up. The first one's coming up December 8th. I'm going to be at the Glen Oaks Library in Queens near the Nassau border. I've got signings coming up at the Offside Tavern, at the East Hampton Library on Long Island, where I did some of the research for the book, at Jerry Cosby before an Islanders Rangers game, Madison Square Garden. Jerry Cosby is a hockey memorabilia store that's located about a block away from the Garden. I'm going to be doing a signing before a game there in January. Yeah, you know, I'm also, though, going to be tweeting out some giveaways. I did it the other day, gave away two tickets to Islanders game versus Dallas. Just want to interact with the fans, hear their memories of the Fish Sticks era. You know, who are their favorite players? What are their memories? They have photos and all that sort of stuff. It's kind of fun for me now, having done this project, to speak with the fans, who I was really writing for the whole time. You know, as I was doing all this research, which took me a solid year of the research and the writing, but much longer just in the whole starting the research and then doing the promotion, getting the book deal, now doing all the promotion at this stage. So I really like the kind of reward of then getting to interact with people who are like, yeah, I was at NASA Coliseum back then, and you know, you told the story that I never knew, or you brought back all these memories. That stuff is really rewarding for me as an author and as a fan. You know, I'm a fan too, and maybe I'll show up at a few games this year in my Wendell Clark fisherman jersey, which I still got. I really appreciate the chance to talk to you about it, and I hope that people enjoy the book.
No problem, man. You've been a great guest, and hopefully we can get you back on. And do me a favor, send me, you know, a list of dates and everything for all your signings and appearances, and I'll put something out there on Twitter myself, and I'll write something up and post it all over my socials as well. So thanks again for coming on, and I'm actually going to be ordering your book for myself for Christmas here shortly. So
that'd be great. Yeah, thank you very much, and let me know when you're at a game. We can get together and I can sign it for you.
All right. Thank you, man. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And let's go, Islanders.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for episode 15. Big thanks for Nick for coming on, talking about his book. Really looking forward to sitting down and reading this one. Get out there. Go on Amazon. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else and wherever you can buy his book and make a purchase. It would make an Islander fan happy this Christmas. Lots of good gifts here in the giving season. Now, a little development by the Islanders is you can order one of these fish stick jerseys, one of the retro jerseys from the 90s, and you can get them customized and everything else. A good tie-in to the book here at the same time. The Islanders tweeted that out earlier today, and I'm actually going to be ordering a Mark Parrish jersey, and my buddy Mark said he would autograph it for me. So that's something I've wanted for a really long time, and I'm looking forward to finally having that in my possession, even though I'm 38 and still chasing jerseys and autographs too. What are you going to do, right? I'm a huge fan. Anyway, thanks for tuning in this week. I will get you back into the swing of things here with the Isles Faithful podcast moving forward right before Christmas and everything else. Got a couple of big things planned, some exciting things. So do us a favor, if you haven't already, please rate and review us on iTunes. It would help us out tremendously. Follow us on Facebook, the Isles Faithful. We got an Instagram. We have Twitter, Faithful Isles. You can follow my own personal account at Isles Blogger. We will see you next time. After the Coliseum game tomorrow, hopefully it'll be a win against Columbus. Let's go, Islanders!